listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
November 10th, 2018. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm broadcasting from the cold Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me at republicbroadcasting.org. Please also visit and subscribe to spingolaspeaks.net, screeningsandyhook.net, and woolliesblog.blogspot.com. During the program, email questions or comments to comment at spingola.email. I invite you to visit our very friendly chat room at spingola.chatango.com. View our past, current, and future guest lineup at spingola.com. You will find the schedule all the way back to October 23rd, 2010, the day that I began broadcasting on RBN. The first guest today is Eric Wilson. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dan. Good to be here.
It's a wonderful thing to have you on the program and to talk about Obamacare. It's kind of a big topic in the midterm elections, and it is unfortunate that very good people who have the best intentions in the world vote for very, very bad programs based on emotional appeal. Would you agree with that?
I would say you have emotional appeal, and then you also have, you know, ignorance, so to speak, as far as, like, logic. They don't know even what they're voting for half the time. You know, you have the emotions out of it, but, like, the whole pre-existing thing, there's a way to cover pre-existing since HIPAA in 1996. So, I mean, but, you know, there's a lot of spin out there.
Yeah, it's amazing. And most of the commercials were about pre-existing conditions, and they used children and, excuse me, it was pretty pathetic.
Yes.
But people fell for it. And as soon as I saw so many young people registering for the first time, I thought, well, there you have all of these government school children who are now able to vote signing up, and you could pretty much tell who they were going to be voting for.
Well, true. And, you know, that's what I read something they were called Uncle Santa's Misguided Children, as I refer to those people. And, unfortunately, you know, are not just the young people. There's a lot of people in this country that are just, you know, not politically savvy. And I really believe to vote, instead of just being a citizen, they should make you take a very basic test. I mean, it can be very basic, you know, who was the 16th president of the United States, you know, things like that. You know, some very, you know, basic stuff there, you know. You know, well, when was the Civil War? Just make some basic history stuff so they can, you know, understand what they're voting about.
Sure. Have some context and to see what, and also, I think that there were a lot of, vote fraud has been an issue for quite some time. Black box voting, and you can switch things, and it's just the whole thing.
Look at Florida. They found what, 100,000 votes, you know, in the last 2 days.
Right.
I mean, come on. I mean, that are how are they real? I mean, you know, it should be, if it was off 100 votes, maybe 200 votes, okay. You know, but come on.
Right. 100,000.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And I remember back when Ron Paul was running in New Hampshire, they switched all of his votes to the opposition. And
yeah.
So voting is, I hate to use the word, well, I won't. It's just a shot in the dark. But it is one of those shoots. And Hillary Clinton attempted to create a national health care program but failed. And then, of course, you had Obama come in with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And it began, the open enrollment began November 1st. And health care, the insurance premiums have gone up dramatically. And what the Affordable Care Act really did was obligate people to buy health insurance, which doesn't necessarily guarantee that they're going to receive health care. It just means that they have to pay a lot of money for insurance that they might not have done before. And the whole idea that one, well, I think health insurance was part of the employment package following World War II with some companies. And so people came to expect that if they were going to get people as employees, that they had to offer them some sort of a little something extra. And so it's just kind of interesting. But tell us what you do.
I'm a health insurance broker, so I deal with, people, mostly self-employed and small businesses, help them find health insurance in multiple states. I've also kind of somehow become like a subject matter Obamacare policy, I don't know, analyst, if you want to call it policy walk, whatever kind of phrase you want to use there for somebody who studies this kind of stuff and keeps their nose to the grindstone on this. So, and one thing, that you notice on these policies is, and it's not just, you can say Republican, Democrat, whatever, when this whole Obamacare was passing, when they were talking about back in 2010, 2009, whenever they were actually talking about it, they kept talking about, insurance companies canceling or kicking you off when you got sick. Well, that was against the law starting in 1996 under HIPAA. Nobody mentioned that. You would have thought some Republican would have known this somewhere along the way. That's not true. And, cancel once you get sick, and then the pre-existing condition thing, and, there's ways to cover that. No one's paying attention when these laws are being passed.
Well, they don't necessarily tell us that they're being passed, and quite frankly, a lot of the laws are not even written by the representatives that they're supposed to be representing us. They're written by companies and then just passed on to the House and the Senate.
If you remember Nancy Pelosi saying, to pass health care to see what's in it. I mean, don't we pay these people to read these things before they present it to us and not vote the other way? I think if they would have read it with one thing, and quite honestly, if we make Congress live by the same rules as we do, this thing would have kicked to the curb, 5 years ago.
Right. But it just keeps growing bigger and bigger. And is it working?
Is it working? Okay. Here's where it works. In the grand scheme of things, no. Because if you look at the individual insurance market, as you were saying, most people get their insurance from their employer, which is probably 90% of the market. Okay. So the individual market was only, 10% of the market. So then there were people with pre-existing conditions and not being able to be the people that were quote unquote uninsurable, which was probably 10% of that 10%. So maybe 1%, and let's say it's 3 or 4% of the population. Still a huge number, okay, of uninsured. You want to be trying to help people any way you can. But to turn the entire insurance market completely upside down, for a small number, was just made no sense to start off with. Now, where it's working, it's working for those who are highly subsidized, the people who are, at 400% of poverty level, 100%, 150% of poverty level. All those people get what are called subsidies, which are advanced premium tax credits. So you have some of those people that are paying, $80 or $90 a month for health insurance. It costs, $800 a month. So for those people, it's working in so much as they have insurance. You know, it's not working because they can't see their doctor. You know, they may or may not get their same doctor. You know, had a client talking to yesterday, and you know they can keep all their doctors, but every hospital anywhere near them does not accept it. So they, you know, if they already get sick, their nearest hospital is 25 miles away. So that, you know, they got their doctors, which is a nice thing, but let's hope you don't need to get to the emergency room anytime soon. So it doesn't work for them. It doesn't work for the upper middle class because you get somebody who's, you know, let's just say a husband and wife making, I don't know, $100,000 a year, which is not a whole lot of money. That's, you know, that's $50,000 each. That's not tons of money. Or even $75,000. They get no subsidy whatsoever. And they're the people that are hurt the most. They're the ones that are paying $1,800 a month, $1,900 a month, you know, for a $14,000 family deductible. So, you know, you got those people paying $24,000 in premium, close to, plus an additional, you know, $15,000 in deductibles. And I mean, that's a whole lot of money, you know, for something that you made before you get a package or before you get any benefit out of it. So for those people, it's definitely not working.
That is amazing.
And then of course, the people who, you know, in a lot of states, there's not that many carriers, I'm in the Chicago area and on, you know, with quote unquote Obamacare, there's three carriers in Northern Illinois and most of the suburbs just one. So, you know, you have Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois in one, and on the individual market, you know, you don't have access to the teaching hospitals. So, you know, if you need to go to Northwestern or Rush, you can't do it. So that's the other problem.
Wow. Wow. Of course, now the whole idea of insurance, I believe, is based on fear. Fear of something that may or may not happen. And so people buy into this. For instance, my last accident in a car wasn't my fault. Somebody decided to pass me when I was turning left on a country road, and I'd had my signal going for quite some time. And this lady just decided that she was going to pass me in my little blue Volkswagen. Well, it was not a good thing, of course. And that's the last accident that I had, but I had been paying car insurance for years, decades. And,
right.
Because we're obligated to buy it. And,
right.
Which is kind of a communistic idea.
Right. Oh, for sure. And you know, the other thing, you know, with health insurance, okay, we're all going to get sick. You know, I guess with auto insurance, you can choose not to drive. You can get around that, you know, you can various things there. Obviously, the bank, if you have a loan on your car, the bank has an insurable interest there, so they want you to have insurance. But on the health insurance side, health insurance really went backwards along the way, because if you look at your car insurance, like you're just talking about, your car insurance doesn't pay for oil changes. It doesn't pay for tires. Your homeowner's insurance doesn't pay for a new one. Right? But for some reason, your health insurance is supposed to. If they go back to making health insurance more of a catastrophic thing, you know, you pay for the doctor visit yourself, you pay for the preventive care yourself, blood work yourself, you know, but if you have the big one, God forbid, you know, you have coverage. And let the people go back and choose where their comfort level is. Or you make it where every plan is catastrophic, and if you want doctor visits, you add that. Like on your auto insurance, you can add towing and car rental replacement, those type of things. You can add all those other bells and whistles if you choose to. I mean, they can make health insurance flat out. You know, you have pick a number, $5,000, $10,000 family deductible, whatever you can afford, whatever risk you want to take. And then if you want doctor visits, okay, that's going to be another X number of dollars out of a copay. And another X number of dollars if you want to have preventative care. Another X number of dollars if you want maternity coverage. And then let everybody, you know, and make it like a buffet. This is you choose what you want from the buffet for your needs, because your medical needs are different than mine. Your family needs are different than mine. So why do I have to be, you know, in a cookie cutter situation?
Right. How true. Now the whole medical industry changed in about 1968-69. Before that, it was an industry, well, after that period, it became a profit an industry for profit. Before that, it wasn't. It was a service industry, and then all of a sudden the big profit entered the picture, and so healthcare in general has gone up. Just, it's amazing, absolutely amazing, how much things cost. For instance, having a baby. I don't know how much it costs now, but when I had my children, well, I'm not going to tell you how much I paid, but it was minimal. It was just, and now, you also have a lot of other things that are questionable that they use. And when you consider that I guess I better get a drink here. You have four entities that make decisions about your health. And one of them is the insurance company. The other is the American Medical Association. The other is the hospitals. And the other is Big Pharma. And so, you have to question, well, they seem to all be in bed together just to scalp the public.
Right.
Do you agree?
Well, you know, I would agree. And one thing you notice, like when you're in the hospital, you know, when my kids were born, which was, you know, we're talking still 15 years ago, but you know, me always being a price conscious person, you know, I was like, they're going to take my son for hearing. I've been in the insurance business 15 years, so my first child was 17, so this was 2 years before I was in the insurance business, but I was still kind of a price conscious person. My oldest son was born, and they said, we're going to take him for a hearing test. And my response was, well, what does that cost? And their response was, well, the insurance pays for it. I'm like, that's the wrong answer. What does it cost? I said, I don't know. I clap my hands, my baby jumps. You know, I said, if he can hear, don't do the test. You know,
wow.
Because, you know, they're doing things, again, for profit. You know, if I didn't have insurance, I'm quite certain they wouldn't have been taking for that test in the first place.
Sure.
So, you know,
well, somebody's paying for it.
Well, that's it, right? But you know, but it's not me. You know, and, you know, they're taking it. Part of the reason why why health insurance is expensive, is because healthcare has become expensive. And when you're running on unnecessary tests, and you know, I'm not saying hearing tests are unnecessary, but in this case, you know, I thought it was. And of course you have doctors now whose malpractice insurance is through the roof because they're afraid of getting sued. So they have to carry more. So they're running more tests, that are, I don't want to say they're unnecessary, but a lot of times just get tested. Well, let's order another test. Let's order another test because to rule this out, rule everything out where in the old days they would say, okay, yeah, you're fine. And then they run 17 tests and they realize, guess what? You're still fine. And they're doing it to protect themselves from being sued. And again, because with insurance company paying for it, you know, everybody seems happy. At the end of the day, you know, when I get my insurance renewal and it's higher than it was because other people had 8 million tests done.
Right. It's a very socialistic, communistic program, and it is as you said that all these tests, but I think that. That as long as the doctor follows the algorithm or the standard of care, that they're pretty safe from getting a lawsuit, because the American Medical Association, well, those four entities define the standard of care, and if a doctor abides by that standard of care, they're pretty safe from a lawsuit, but they still have these high insurance premiums.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Right.
Which chases
right.
a lot of doctors out of the profession.
Oh, for sure. Right. You're seeing a lot of people with me in there. You're seeing more and more go work for hospital groups and go for places where the family doctor closing his prior practice is becoming more and more common.
Oh, absolutely. And more doctors are working for the hospitals, even though
right.
they have a private office. It's just a very difficult situation. Okay, we do have a 3-minute break. We will be right back. Welcome back. My first guest today is Eric Wilson, and we are talking about Obamacare. Is it working, or is this the calm before the storm? During the break, I was thinking that the amount that people pay per month for insurance, if they would take that amount of money and put in their own account, rather than hand it over to the insurance companies, but just take it and put it in their own account, that it would be there if they need it or not. That would be the most, that would be the most appropriate thing to do. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a great idea. I don't think most people are disciplined enough to do that. It's just like saving for retirement. You don't see enough people saving for retirement, right? Those kind of things too. Everybody says they have a rainy day fund, but it rains a lot of families, I guess, because they aren't able to save that. But in theory, that'd be a nice idea. Or even if you took a portion of it, had a catastrophic type plan where, you know, there was a company pre-Obamacare that sold plans with a $25,000 deductible. You know, 100% coverage, $25,000, you know, with the first 25. And a lot of people, you know, had $25,000, like you said, saved for the rainy day, and they would just sit there in their little bank account just in case, you know. And those health plans were like $80 a month for a $25,000 deductible, which I personally wouldn't have a deductible that high personally, but maybe an $80 a month I would. And, you know, they just had the money stashed away, and people want it. I think there's a way for, you know, to save more money. And if people were disciplined and had a savings account of only for medical, that'd be a good way to go.
But that's saying that the average person, the average family, isn't disciplined enough. So, gosh, the government had better step in and make them more disciplined and force them to do this.
My biggest problem with the Affordable Care Act is in the United States of America, nobody's ever been required to buy anything that they didn't want to buy.
Exactly.
Auto insurance was a law in many states, but it wasn't so much you were driving the car, but it was more so because, you know, you have a lien on your car and the bank wants their money if you crash it. That was a bigger reason for a lot of that stuff. And, you know, forcing people to buy health insurance, pretty soon they're going to say, you know, the rationale was you have to have health insurance because health care is expensive. Well, funerals are expensive too, but you're not required to have life insurance. I would recommend it, but nonetheless, for the same reason, that we're looking at, or weddings are expensive too. Maybe we should start having wedding insurance too, because, you know, you're going to get married someday and, you know, that's going to be expensive. So,
right.
I mean, it's got really out of control with what you need and why you need it and what you need. You know,
and
Obamacare
and
now, I'm 55, and I said, government tell me I have maternity coverage as a 50-year-old male. That makes no sense.
Right, right. And the government telling the citizens what they should have and making it obligatory. It just rubs me the wrong way. Now, somebody posted in the chat room about the first HMO Act of 1973. So they really started this, like I say, just about after 68-69. Didn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, the administration was working on some sort of a health care program. And I think that it was at that point it was decided that the healthcare industry was going to grow. And of course, Big Pharma is probably, well, it generates 17% of the GPA in this country. That's pretty sad when you consider that we have one of the, we spend the most for healthcare, and yet we are one of the most healthy nations on the planet. Infant mortality rate is horrid. It's a pretty sad state of affairs.
Yes, it is. We spend a lot on healthcare. I believe we have better doctors in this country than most countries. I think our medical care is better. That's why you see people from Canada where they're socialized medicine coming here for care. But we're definitely not the most effective. And like you said, because we have, you know, the big pharma, you know, we have some of the lobbyists in there that are just kind of, have got the cost out of whack. I think the CARES effect, let me rephrase that. I think the CARES is effective. I think the cost is not relative to the CARE.
Right. And, as far as the algorithm and just the whole the IDC code are set up so that everything is generated for the insurance companies. Everything has to have a code, an insurance code, and they have to prescribe certain things for certain illnesses. Where's the doctor in this? They just look up things on their computer rather than listen to the patient and get a history and know the patient's history and be able to evaluate things like they used to. It's all done by the insurance companies and.
Well, you know, the other thing too is, you know, these billing codes that they use are kind of goofy. Like, for example, years and this probably predates the Affordable Care Act. Well, my wife had a health plan where pap smears were covered at 100%, which that's a good thing. Well, suddenly one year she goes for a pap smear and we get a big bill. And we're like, why? And it was coded, instead of being coded as a preventative pap smear, it was coded as a cancer screening, which a pap smear is a cancer screening. But it was for preventative purposes, and we went back and forth and they said, well, we always coded it as a cancer screening. Yeah, but we never had it for you. It was probably 6 months of back and forth before the thing got paid by the insurance company because they didn't like the code. And the doctor didn't want to change the code because he said, well, all I do is a cancer screening. And it was a preventative pap smear, which should have been, you know, covered. It ended up being it, but that just shows how screwy the billing is.
Right. All right. We're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest, our first guest today is Eric Wilson, and we're talking about Obamacare. Is Obamacare working, or is this the calm before the storm? And you mentioned that your wife had a pap smear, and there was an issue about whether it was cancer screening. And personally, I think screening is kind of a gimmick also, that they are looking for something to treat. And you might feel absolutely perfect, wonderful, nothing wrong. And you can go and get one of those Lifeline screenings, and they can find 5 or 6 things wrong with you in order to treat you for those things. And yet you could be feeling pretty well. And cancer screenings. I know that in breast cancer, I think it's 90% of the screenings are false positive. So, and then our very astute producer made a comment, and he said, there's no real focus on staying healthy. We have poisoned food and water. We have glyphosate, which was produced by Monsanto, also the producers of Agent Orange. So we have glyphosate in a lot of our food, including a lot of breakfast cereals. And then you have fluoridated water. And, of course, if you drop a canister of fluoride on a cement ground, it'll start eating the cement. They have to call in hazmat. And the same thing with chemo drugs. If you bust a vial of chemotherapy drugs, you have to call in hazmat. Same thing for a lot of things. Mercury, for instance. If you break one of those bulbs, those little round bulbs, that are supposed to be wonderful for you, that are really full of mercury, if you step on one, you could just destroy your foot. But if you break one, you have to call in hazmat to clean up the mess. So there's a lot of things really questionable. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree with it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, we did well. And I mean, and as a society, you know, in as Americans, we're not exactly the best, the most health conscious people either. I mean, a lot of people, you know, I eat McDonald's too, but there are some people that eat McDonald's a lot and other fast food things, which that cannot be the healthiest choice. You know, or even just, I mean, we live a busy lifestyle. Sometimes you work till 7, 8 o'clock and you gotta get quick food on the way home. You know, so I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's just we're in a society that's not, you know, we're not the healthiest of eaters just in general, let alone all the stuff in a lot of our food that we eat every day.
Right. I understand that you could take a McDonald's hamburger and put it away somewhere, like in a shirt pocket or something, and take it out 9 months later and it would still be, edible, quote unquote. So I haven't.
I know that, but
I haven't had anything from McDonald's for probably 25 years or so. There's also, we drink a lot of soda, diet soda. Diet soda has aspartame in it, which is a excitotoxin. So you're absolutely correct. We do not make healthy choices, and our very astute producer, who brought this up, is absolutely right also. We do not make healthy choices. And of course our health is really dependent on those choices.
Right. And that's not our healthcare systems. Well, you know, you hear a lot of people how bad the healthcare system is in this country because of, the number of heart attacks and whatnot that we have. And that's a lot of the, like you were saying, the healthcare choices you make affect your health in general. So it's not, it's not everything is the healthcare system's fault.
That's probably true. Yes. Now the average wage or increase, in earnings for a doctor has, gone up dramatically over the last 50 years. And, they have a certain lifestyle that they have to maintain. Many of them take out loans to go to school. And so they have to maintain they have to abide by the standard of care, by the insurance companies, by the American Medical Association, the hospitals, and Big Pharma in order to pay off those loans. And they have a certain lifestyle that they have to uphold. And, I know a lot of doctors who have gone into practice, and they never say cure. They say, it's practice. In fact, they're not supposed to say cure. But they go into the profession with the idea that they want to help people, and then they get stuck in a system that they never anticipated, where they lose their autonomy. And I have talked to a doctor that I've gone to since 1988, not recently, but I asked her about this. I said, do you feel like you've totally lost your autonomy, that you're not really at liberty to make the decisions that you would have made when you first entered practice? And she absolutely agreed with me. And so that they have to follow the rules in order to stay, in order to maintain their license. And
right.
You have to question that. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, what you're seeing now too is the advent of what's called direct primary care, which are physicians that no longer accept insurance. They have, there's varying ways to do it, but many, frequently it's a subscription program where you may pay,
for
example, what part of the country, $50 a month, or I know there's one in the city of Chicago that's $125 a month, or one in Indianapolis, I think it's $50 a month, where you just pay the doctor fee every month, and that gives you, unlimited access to the doctor. And,
right.
And there's no insurance, and there's no paperwork. And I actually went to the Free Market Medical Association Illinois convention down in, Bloomington, Peoria, down that way a few months back, and they were just talking about how the model has changed. And they can charge cash. There's no bill paperwork. They don't have to have a staff. to file all the paperwork, and they can do it. They showed one of the people there was a spinal cord doctor who used to work at the hospital in, I think, in Dunpier, whatever hospital that was. And he was talking about how, you know, a spinal cord surgery would build at like $400,000. After the PPO discount, it was like $208,000. But he does it for like, you know, 78 cash. You know, so it's like,
wow.
Like, you know, the market was ungodly high, and that's how, and they do that because there's so many different levels of people have to get paid, hospitals get paid, and the goofy PPO discount, and I really believe if they wanted to fix the whole healthcare system, whether you have subscription or not, just tell us what things cost. If I have insurance, great, my insurance pays for it. If not, I pay for it. But the same price, it should be like if you and I were both shopping at Walmart, and we both saw the same shirt, it would cost us the same amount. It didn't matter, well, you're insured with State Farm, so you're going to pay 10% less. He's insured with Allstate, so he's going to get 30% more. Or he's got Blue Cross, and he gets it for 80% off. You know,
right.
It makes it the same. And then, you know, if I'm a doctor and I'm charging $125 for a physical, and there's a doctor down the street charging $75 for a physical, I, as a consumer, can say, well, I want this doctor anyway, even though he's $125. Or, you know what? I'm good paying $75. And you see the cost of care come down drastically. If you look at cosmetic surgery, the cost of cosmetic surgery has gone down instead of up because it's not covered by insurance. It's competitive.
So
you're seeing the free market at work in the cosmetic field. And then, and you're seeing that at the start of that with the Free Market Medical Association, you know, and direct primary care is trying to let the free market work because the politicians aren't going to fix it, you know, and, so it's going to take, you know, the free market to fix it.
Right. And once that kicks in, or I was listening to a program with a doctor who used the subscription model, and he was incredibly happy with it, and he had sufficient enough patients where he covered his costs, and it worked out fine for both of them. And it was just a wonderful model, I think.
Right.
And if enough doctors, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying if you could fix the model, actually, you get your preventive care through a DPC or a direct primary care doctor at, you know, $100 a month or whatever. So that's $1,200. You know, where a normal plan now is close to $1,000 a month. And then if they come back to the catastrophic healthcare programs where, you know, if you did have a heart attack or cancer or something, God forbid, you weren't crippled there, you know, you could have a nice package for, you know, a couple hundred dollars a month again. You know, and still be able to afford, you know, the subscription to the doctor.
Right.
That would solve a lot of problems.
Right. I know, I've heard that some people actually marry other people just for insurance benefits. And that's very sad.
That's been done, yes.
Very sad situation.
And now with Obamacare, it's the other way because sometimes you're better off being divorced because of the cost there. Where, you know, if you're a husband or wife and if one of you makes too much money, you know, then you, and you, cause one of the rules to get a subsidy from Obamacare is you have to file jointly, to qualify for the subsidy. And sometimes you do the math, you're better off being divorced. So it's with, you know, the whole marriage thing is a big deal on both sides of the equation, whether it be from a group health side, get married, or get divorced on the individual side. The system doesn't work in a lot of ways because of, you know, when you think of marital choice for your health insurance or your health care, that's silly.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's crazy stuff.
So what is the, you talk about, the calm before the storm. What kind of a situation, storm, what kind of a storm do you see occurring because of Obamacare?
Well, I mean, I think the idea of Obamacare always was to get to a single payer system in this country. I think that was always the idea. I think this was intended to bring costs up and give people bigger subsidies and, you know, give people free things. And then suddenly, you know, we have, you know, quote unquote free medical care, you know, and socialize it, you know, and once you own their health, you own everything. And then, you know, I mean, if we get to a socialized world where the government's in charge of your health. Well, then they're in charge of your grocery list too. And it's like, well, no, if you have to buy broccoli and not chocolate, and because of everything else, so then they're in complete control. And I think that was the idea. Now you're hearing a lot of talk about Medicare for all, but these people don't even really realize what Medicare for all is, because Medicare for all would actually be Medicare for none, because they have to blow up everything, and everybody would lose their corporate plan. People on Medicare would lose their stuff. The people in the private plans would lose everything, and it would start over, and it would look totally different. Medicare for all would look nothing like what Medicare looks like. It would look like what a corporate plan looks like. And that is like $34 trillion we have to come up with it to pay for it. That's a whole other story. But like, I think if we double everybody's taxes, you still couldn't pay for it. But that's what you're hearing. That's what you're hearing, from the people wanting. Unfortunately, people don't even understand what it really even is.
Right.
They understand the word free. People understand free healthcare.
And it's really socialism. And socialism is not going to continue to work as soon as the money runs out from the people who are putting the money in. There's only so much money, and other people's money is going to disappear.
Right.
So,
if you remember back when Ronald Reagan was making movies back in whatever year that was, that was back when they had the 90% tax bracket. Ronald Reagan could only make one movie a year because the second movie would put him in the 90% bracket. Tax bracket, so he chose to make one movie a year. So, I mean, if you end up with a 90% tax bracket, or how do you do anything? If they're taking 90% of your money, what's the incentive to do anything? That's where socialism fails, because then there's no incentive for me to work any harder. If you're taking 90% of my money, I probably want to make less money, so you're taking less of my money.
Right, and you brought up a good point. They own our property. If you don't pay your property taxes, all of a sudden you realize that you don't own your home. You may have paid it. It may be free and clear. But if you fail to pay your property taxes, it's gone. And so the very last thing that the government can own is your body. My gosh, your body? Yeah.
That's a scary thought when you're telling me what I can put into my body, what I have to put in my body,
And the other thing
what
too,
I can do with my body.
Is if you're in this medical, paradigm, then they can force you to receive health care or certain treatments that you would not have otherwise chose. And if you do not get that care, you can be put in jail. Or if you refuse, if you have a child that's ill and you're treating that child, with something natural, that child can be taken away from you.
Right.
That's pretty scary. That is happening.
Right. Well, the other thing you'll see happen, and this is, you see it now to an extent, with healthcare rationing, and death panels and whatnot. I mean, when the government starts paying for everything, at some point they determine the value of your life. There's been talk, I think it was Bernie Sanders or one of those guys, it might not have been Bernie Sanders, but they were talking about, people over age 75 don't really contribute to society, so their value is not worth as much, as the working person. So, I can foresee situations where somebody who's in their 70s goes to the emergency room with a brain bleed, and nope, let it go. We're not going to fix that. Right. Let's get the next guy. That's going to cost too much to have surgery, and that just doesn't seem right either. Because why is the guy who's 75 years old and been retired for 10 years, why is his life less significant than somebody who's 45?
Right. I think that Ezekiel Emanuel is the one that came up with that idea.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Yes, you're absolutely correct.
And he is the brother of Rahm Emanuel, the current mayor of Chicago. And you're right. And you also have to factor in, with that date, 68, 69, then you had the abortion, Roe versus Wade in 73. And that was all based on, We'll have a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. We'll pick this up on the other side. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our first guest today is Eric Wilson. We're talking about Obamacare. And we just brought up right before the break the Roe v. Wade situation. And Norma McCorvey, alias Jane Roe, never actually had an abortion. And yet the Supreme Court case, Roe v. Wade, legalized abortion for all 50 states. Now, prior to this case, abortion was not under the jurisdiction of the federal government, but was the responsibility of each state. And this watershed event and the circumstances that led up to it forever changed the political and cultural landscape. The Republicans appeared antagonistic to the ruling, but the Democrats favoring the more liberal but phony stance as the party of the poor and downtrodden saw this as an opportunity to strengthen themselves as well as their party. And it's very interesting how she got roped into this. But certainly abortion was federalized and legalized, and that was what, 58 million infants, later? Interesting.
Yeah, very much so.
Right.
So, and sometimes you get some things just shouldn't be, federal government just doesn't need to be involved in certain things. When you get to healthcare, it's like, every state is different, just like your household is different than my household. And, when they left healthcare to the states, it worked pretty well. And now we have this federal thing and it's a mess. We have, it's just gone the wrong way because, you got states in the South, like the state of Florida. I've never lived in Florida, but I know a lot of older people have moved to Florida for retirement. So that, to move out of Illinois for either tax purposes or just to get away from the cold,
Right.
But the healthcare needs in the state of Florida. If you have an older clientele, and I don't know that Florida is overall an older clientele. Just as an example, their healthcare needs are different than Illinois or New Hampshire or Maine or California. So to try to federalize stuff like that is really, really difficult to try to get it right. So if they send it back to the state, so each state decide what's best for them, that, just like everything else, that's how this country was founded, because each state is unique.
Right. Right. And of course that, you talked about federalizing control, in Washington, for everything.
Right.
Including following the so-called Civil War. Things were more centralized. And so Washington has a great deal of power and is gaining more and more power with each of these crazy laws. And then you have these people who are embracing them because they sound good, because people are typically a little tiny bit lazy, and they want something for nothing sometimes. They think they're getting something for nothing when in fact they're relinquishing their freedom to choose on so many different levels.
And for sure.
That's something that's so important, is our ability to choose is quickly diminishing.
Right. And of course, people don't realize it.
Right. Alrighty, we're at the top of the hour. We will take some phone calls, when we come back from our break at 800-313-9443. You're right back.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Wilson, and he's talking about Obamacare, whether it's working or is this the calm before the storm. Now, if this all just falls apart, what will that look like?
Well, I guess there's two ways it falls apart. You know, one, it falls apart and the government steps in and tries to run everything. Or they say, let's let the free market take over. I mean, and you know, they really never tried to let the free market handle healthcare completely. I mean, they've always had, you know, a lot of regulation in there. I mean, there's really a very easy fix for what we have now. I mean, to fix this whole thing, and, you know, they won't like the answer because of that. You have to have a competing product with quote unquote Obamacare, but you could actually get the best of both worlds. If you had your Obamacare on one side, and then your non-Obamacare on the other side, and make the other part, you know, like it used to be, you know, underwritten plans, and if you don't qualify for an underwritten plan, then you go to Obamacare, and it could all work. It could all work very nicely, but I don't think the politicians want to go that route.
And it's interesting too, because of course the government produces nothing.
Right.
Absolutely nothing. All they do is create legislation, and we need less government and less government interference in private enterprise. And of course, we've all seen the productivity in this country drop so incredibly in the last 20 years. Well, since NAFTA. Basically,
yeah.
Since NAFTA.
Right.
And, so there's just so many people that can flip hamburgers at McDonald's or wherever, and so many service industries, which of course the medical industry is supposed to be a service industry.
It's supposed to be, and I still think most doctors, I mean, at least at heart, are in for the art of treating patients. I mean, I think most of them are, but there are quite a few that just can't make it anymore as that way, and have such more of a business. I mean, when your malpractice insurance is $100,000 a year for a lot of them,
right?
I mean, January 1st, you turn your lights on, and you got to make your first $100,000 just to pay for your insurance. That doesn't include your staff, and you haven't eaten yet. You know, you got to make that. So there's. You know, and insurance company reimbursements are getting smaller and smaller, and Medicare reimbursements are smaller and smaller. So it's getting to the point where some doctors, it's almost like lick 'em and stick 'em. All right, boom, in, out, almost like an assembly. You're in, you're out. You can't spend the time with the patient. I think as a doctor, if you can only spend 10 to 15 minutes with a patient, a lot of times that's not enough.
But I think it's down to seven.
To eat.
7 minutes.
Right. Yeah, right. And I think you're running at 7 minutes. 8 minutes, and that's not enough time to really treat your patient. And that's where I like the direct primary care model. You know, they don't have that limitation of 7 to 10 minutes and all the tests required stuff there. They can run their business like a business and still be a doctor and treat patients. I know my doctor is basically, with the exception of Medicare, he still takes Medicare patients, but he's gone for the most part a cash pay for the average Joe, if you're not on Medicare. And it's, you know, him and one staff, he has no nurse in the office, it's just him and the staff, or like it's his receptionist, I guess, him and her, and, you know, $75 cash or Medicare. That's it. And he'll spend an hour with you. You go see him, he'll spend an hour with you. So, and I think it's a great practice you got going on.
Oh, absolutely. At least you feel like you're being heard. And one of the things that is also occurring is that many of the services, the service that they offer, vaccines, a lot of the vaccines are now being distributed at Walgreens or somewhere else, at your supermarket by other people. And so the doctors are not receiving the cash for those benefits or those things right. that they used to take care of. And I know right. that's a big thing. So I don't know. I wouldn't get a vaccine, but.
Well, you're true. I mean, when you go to Walgreens Quick Clinic or whatever they call it, or the CVS, you know, Quick Clinic, you get a lot of stuff taken care of. One, you don't have to wait. You don't have to make an appointment. You know, when somebody's got the way of using the wait lines aren't incredibly long, and it's convenient and oftentimes cost less. So that, you know, that's, you know, it's a nice idea. It's usually a nurse practitioner, not a doctor, but they can administer those shots, and there's a model for that too, I guess.
And I really think that they are going to try to pare down the number of doctors. Well, I don't think that you have as many people graduating from medical school as you used to because of the situation that people foresee. Because then you're going to have just people, well, nurse practitioners or just technicians who are going to be handing out medicines based on the algorithm to the point that why would you need a doctor to do evaluations if we can get this person who is much, much less expensive, to do the very same thing.
Oh, no, I think earlier then, I think also you're seeing with some of the pharmacy acquisitions that we've seen, you know, like, CVS purchasing Aetna, they already have a clinic, and you're seeing, other companies doing the same thing. You know, you're going to see the pharmacy, the Walgreens and the CVS be almost like a Walmart of healthcare. You know, where you're going to have the doctor on site and the prescription on site and the nurse practitioner on site and just be almost like a health warehouse.
Right.
But unfortunately the part that gets missed in that whole thing is, you know, we don't necessarily have anybody to regulate costs. There's still no regulation of costs on medical care. And you can charge
right.
what you want, and I'm a free market person. I agree that you charge what you want, but it shall be within reason.
Sure. We do have some callers with some questions. Let's take Laura in Colorado. Laura?
Deanna. Hi, Deanna. I absolutely love your show and have
Thank
for
you.
A long time. I wanted to kind of chime in on this if I could. A while ago, one of you made the I've been in my kitchen cooking, so I've missed a little bit here and there, but I noticed that you were talking about forced insurance, like forced car insurance earlier in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of those folks that believes it's completely unconstitutional for the government to try to make a law to force people into a contract with a private corporation for any reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, I'm against the Obamacare thing and so now I'm going to kind of tell you a little bit about what happened in our lives. My husband changed jobs, and the job that he – most jobs will not let you have medical benefits for the first 90 days, okay? And so he's 10 days on the job. He's headed to work, and he's hit 65 miles an hour broadside. And he was going 60, and it rolled the car four times, and it broke his back in four places and crushed his leg.
Dear.
He was 15 miles from the house when it happened. It's the first time he had ever left his cell phone at home. And I woke up in the morning and heard the cell phone go off, and I thought he had been playing with my cell phone and had changed my ringtone or something. And I went into the kitchen and found his phone there, and it was his new boss saying, "Where are you?" on the text. And I thought, "What do you mean, where are you?" And I still wasn't quite awake.
Sure.
And looked at the clock and saw what time it was, and I thought, wait a minute. And we live about 40 miles out of the city. We live way out on a rural property. So I was in my pajamas, and I just threw on like a camo hat that I wear out here on the farm, and I jumped in the car, and I drove thinking he might have had a flat tire or something. And I came up on the accident, and they had already taken my husband in a helicopter. helicopter ride alone would have been, I don't even know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars. He was almost killed in the accident. I drove on to the hospital there. He was in the hospital almost a month. We had no insurance because he had only been on the job 10 days. Now, I'm going to tell you how grateful we are. I can't hardly even tell it without crying because I'm so grateful that we will not be sued for the rest of our lives over the medical bill. I believe, however, that, you know, it's really kind of funny. The government sits there and says that the individual serf or peasant has got to pay for car insurance, and we just have liability, you know, and that was it, because it was an old car, and that's the one he drove to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, oh, you've got to have insurance. But they don't turn around and tell the corporation when you hire somebody, you have to provide medical insurance for that person. They do it whenever they're damn good and ready, you know, 90 days right after the person starts working there. I am extremely grateful that these medical bills were covered because I don't know how many millions of dollars it would have been. He had to have rods and bolts put in his back. He had to have rods in his leg. And they were able to save his leg. For 6 months, we thought they were going to cut his leg off. And you know what? He went back to work within 1 year. We weaned him off of the morphine and the oxycodone. He was on so much of that stuff that it was just crazy. And I was out on the farm doing the work and fell and fractured my ankle in two places and had a tendon that came apart for an inch and a half. They said it came apart like a rope. And so we were sharing one wheelchair and one walker. It was the most devastating year, 2017. I've never had a year like that in my life. And we're in our mid-50s. So, you know, my husband did go back to work within a year. But he's got problems remembering, and he got a job with Johnson & Johnson in a machine shop making the very rods that go into people's bodies when they're broken. And they cut him within 3 weeks because he's not able to remember things the way he did before. So now we're entering a whole new world of it and still on Medicaid, and it's just, the whole thing is kind of like it's being on like a carousel, a nightmare carousel with a bunch of wicked clowns or something. I mean, it's something that I wouldn't wish off on anyone, but there's a lot of things we've learned. And one of the things we learned is that even though we're on this Medicaid, you don't subject yourself to the primary care doctors because all they want to do is drug you to death. And so we just refuse to take any of their drugs. We had been 20 years out of the medical community when the accident happened. We had been doing natural health care at our home. None of us took drugs. You know, we ate the right food, you know, and all that. And we're thrust into this system that we were completely unfamiliar with. And it is a big money-driven system. It's a money-driven system that is all about pharmacom and getting people to take as much drugs as they can. My husband, after 6 months on the really heavy pain relievers, and I had been on some too after I fractured my ankle, but I told him, I said, we can't live like this, and we literally weaned ourselves off of the pain medication.
Oh, bless your heart, Laura.
Yeah. Oh. And so my husband does drink Kratom.
Kratom
mixed with water.
Yeah.
Oh, he loves it. He drinks two glasses of it a day. And he's able to do things. He can do things out on the farm and whatnot. But I don't know what we're going to do about being able to find jobs because at this point it's a nightmare. And now he's got to go to a neurologist. His head injury was real bad, and he never was really treated for that. So, you know, I just wanted to kind of throw it out there and say that we had lived a natural life until this horrific accident occurred. We would have loved to have had insurance through his employer, but he had only been on the job 10 days, and that wasn't.
Right.
That wasn't a reality. But for all of you out there that have paid taxes that, you know, I think helped to pay my husband's medical bills, I want all of you to know how much I appreciate it because we don't know what in the world we would have done if they would have taken our home away, our house is paid for. I can't imagine if we would have had our house taken away from us and living in a car or something or happened to resort to living in our travel trailer.
Right,
you know,
right.
We just don't know. But I just wanted to say thank you for all of you out there that are listening that pay taxes and it was able to help us in this catastrophic incident that we had no control over. And God bless all of you. And You know, in an incident like this, you know, I just never dreamed anything like this would happen in our lives. But when it comes to something catastrophic like that, you know, I think that the program that is put into place helped us.
Right.
I know a lot of other people abused the crap out of it.
It was there before Obamacare.
Okay.
Laura, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that story, and bless you and your husband, and keep taking the kratom. I understand that it's much better to take it in liquid form than in capsule form.
He drinks it down really fast. He says it tastes nasty, and he mixes it up, and he drinks it down really fast, and it helps him. Yeah, maybe I should.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for the program.
Thanks for the call.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. Okay, we do have a caller, Karen in Minnesota. Karen?
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Are you able to hear me okay?
Yes,
Okay. I have much to say. I have worked for the medical industry for over 22 years in the hospitals and for private doctors. And I have opted for herbal remedies and alternative care. But the thing is, you were talking about Obamacare and the elderly being eliminated. The reason the elderly are being eliminated, like you said, is because they're worthless eaters. They're not contributing with working and the taxes. And it has been my experience with working with the elderly since I retired from the corrupt state of Michigan. Working for the elderly, I have noticed that as soon as they fall or have any medical problem, they are admitted to the hospital, and they haven't been on any medical drugs prior to that. But when they come home, they have about 10 different drugs that they put them on, and that is a given. And the other thing is a lot of my seniors go to the hospital and they never return because they're not a priority. And this Obamacare is an abomination. I mean, it has been created to destroy the middle class, period. My daughter and her husband pay over $5,000 a year for a policy, and they have a $10,000 deductible. Well, they don't want to go for health care when they got to pay $10,000 deductible. So a lot of these middle class don't even take care of their medical problems, like my neighbor. And Obamacare was created to destroy the middle class.
Wow.
And Karen, I see that all across. I'm a broker in about 12 different states. I have people calling, you know, from other states as well. And I see that in every state. The same thing, the middle-class person with a high deductible, afraid to get sick and afraid to go to the doctor.
Yeah, and see, the poor are exempt. They get it free. And the rich, they can afford it, or the government and politicians can afford or are exempt due to their having special medical benefits.
Right.
Right, right.
And have you ever, you need to do a program on this, on the HIPAA Act. I am big on it. I have studied it from the get-go. And we need to reveal this HIPAA Act that I exempt myself from every time I go to a doctor or hospital. I refuse to sign it because it gives all the medical information to over 200 government agencies. But it doesn't give your family or friends any access to contacting you when you are in the hospital unless you are given permission. How can a family member give permission when they are dying?
Right.
And that is all because the hospital wants all the power to eliminate you without your knowing what they're doing to your family member.
Wow.
They could be shooting you up with a vaccine. I mean, I know about a friend. Her father died in Texas. And before she could even get there, they had done an autopsy and cremated him without her permission.
Oh my gosh. Maybe you should come on the program and talk about HIPAA. Well, thank you so much, Karen. Wow.
Yes, and also the FDA is banning herbal remedies. I know of a bona fide herbal provider.
That's always been the case.
And she committed suicide because the FDA kept bothering her.
Yeah, the FDA was designed to protect corporations, just as every other ABC agency is.
Thank you so much, Karen. The Federal Deaf Association.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Karen, for your phone call.
All right, bye.
Okay, we do have a quick break here. We do have one more caller, and we just have a very limited amount of time. So let's take Nancy in California. Nancy, really quick, because we are limited on our time.
Okay, I'll be really fast. I've listened to the debate about euthanasia. I'm against euthanasia, but I'm also against, you know, everybody says they want to die naturally. Well, a lot of people say they want to die naturally, but it's not dying naturally when you're put in a hospital and artificially kept alive or had all these, you know, the Indians, when they had an elderly member that they knew that the time was close, they would wander off and, you know, sit down and chant and just accept what is natural, you know. But
animals
we don't
do that too.
They say that the most medical expenses we incur are in the last 2 years of our lives. And who ends up with that money? It's the medical establishment. And what do they give us? Do they give us quality of life? No. I think that we need to accept that at some point in our life, we need to just graciously allow the natural course of living, which is death.
Right. Well, thank you, Nancy, for your thoughts.
I agree with that, yes.
Eric, what do you think?
No, I agree with it. You know, keeping people alive artificially makes no sense. I think sometimes, you know, I'm against euthanasia as well, but I think it's sometimes, you know, when we're ready to go, maybe it's just time.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to go at all, but,
right. Well, you don't mind, but if I can't function anymore, maybe I do. You know, right now I don't want to go ever, but right now I want to live forever, but, you know.
Right. Somebody in the chat room, Lily, said, don't forget to mention choice. If I, as an intelligent adult, want to treat my condition or disease with homeopathy, herbs, acupuncture, energy medicine, et cetera, it is not covered by health insurance. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you know, I go back to, you know, I believe health insurance should be, you know, for the things you can't pay for. I think we should all be able to treat ourselves, you know, with herbal remedies or chiropractic or, you know, healthy eating, healthy diet, you know, and, you know, if I want to go see a doctor, you know, I just go back to make health insurance like the other insurance, just like your auto insurance, just like your home insurance, catastrophic for the big things that you can't control. Unfortunately, cancer is devastating. We can't control when we, you know, if we get cancer, when we get cancer, anything like that. Well, if you live long enough, that's probably going to get you. So, I mean, I need insurance in case, God forbid, I get that disease. I can afford to pay $100 to a doctor visit, unless I want to, but I could. If they didn't, and that would bring the cost of care down. And the answer to fixing the healthcare system is make it catastrophic. And then that way, if I want to go see an herbalist, great. I'm paying for that person. Let's see a doctor, I pay that person. That gives us the choice to see what we want without any kind of regulation and anybody telling me what kind of coverage I need.
Right.
So,
are you still there?
Your choice, Eric. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, you. Okay. You faded out for a minute there. Yes, I agree with you totally. It's a sad thing. It's criminal what is going on. And, the stories, particularly, with Laura in Colorado, what an incredible story. And,
sad.
But Medicaid, which is what they depended upon, was in place long before Obamacare.
Oh, yeah, and, for sure. Right.
And as she said, thank goodness that there was that particular entity that could help. Otherwise, what would they have done? Oh, my gosh. Right. What a story. And that is true. And I'm not sure why, when you accept a new job, that you must wait 90 days or 3 months for your health care benefits to kick in. I think that should start the minute that you start work.
I think a lot of companies have like a 90-day probationary period before they allow you to 401k and all those other things, just because if it doesn't work out, it's like a new hire, you never really know what you're getting. I think that's always been, they always call it a 90-day probationary period or a 60-day probationary period where they can kind of get rid of you for really no reason. So I think that's kind of where that comes in, I think. That's always my interpretation.
That's true. But usually when you hire somebody, they pretty much know your background. They know what kind of work you've done. I think they should, be more trusting.
I don't dispute that. But I think that's why they don't, somebody's resume might be good, their history's good, but, you never really know. So some jobs you get just aren't for that person. We've probably all taken a job somewhere in our life that either out of necessity and it wasn't right for us, or because we needed to work, or was a job early in our career that we just hated, and we've all done what we had to do for our family, and sometimes taking a job is just not the right job you want, it doesn't work out for your side.
Sure. That I think it'd be interesting to do a program on the HIPAA, that Karen suggested.
Yeah,
I think that needs to be explored. Definitely.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Well, I studied the Section 2742, which deals with pre-existing conditions and the insurance side of it there, which people never understand that, but that talks about the health insurance portability, where it talks about where insurance which can't cancel you for because you get sick or whatnot, and that's most of 1996, so people don't understand either.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for being on the program today. We'll have
thank
to do this
great.
Again. Thank you
so
much.
For sure. Hey, I'm in Chicago. Let's have one sometime.
Okay.
Great. All right. Sounds good. Take care.
All righty. Bye bye. All righty. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.